It is Tuesday, July 9th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from Pilates Plus, offering Pilates classes and equipment, bar classes, massage therapy, private instruction, and more. Information and class schedules are available at PilatesPlusNWA.com or 287-4519.
Ahead on this edition of Ozark, Steve Yates collects inspiration for his short stories almost everywhere, from his time working on highways in Arkansas to a true crime story in Springfield, Missouri. His new volume of stories, Some Kinds of Love, runs the gamut from straight-ahead narrative to fantasy-laced science fiction. We'll talk to the former Fayetteville resident about his latest collection.
Plus, concern for some small banks in Arkansas, and if you've ever been to the Waffle House on Dixon Street in Fayetteville, you're familiar with the restaurant's logo of a waffle chased by a hungry pig. We'll meet the artist behind that picture. More of her work is included in an exhibit in Springdale this month.
But first, as supporters of same-sex unions around the country celebrate recent rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court, activists are continuing the fight to legalize gay marriage in all 50 states. Yesterday at the Clinton School of Public Service, Hope native Chad Griffin of the Human Rights Campaign spoke of his organization's efforts to challenge laws banning gay marriage. He called for Arkansas's elected officials to support a civil right he says would mean equal treatment for more citizens.
We need the leadership of those who are elected in this state in Washington to be with us on this issue. Some of the elected officials here are undecided or at least haven't publicly expressed their views on these issues, and we need them. Both of the senators from this state, quite frankly, should be supportive of something that's such a basic fairness.
Meanwhile, Arkansas's Economic Development Director Grant Tenniel joined Griffin and other advocates in supporting same-sex marriage at the Capitol. He says the state would benefit economically by legalizing gay marriage because it would show companies that Arkansas is friendly to a valuable workforce.
We're not talking about inconsequential companies. We're talking about major brands here in the United States. And I think that increasingly companies make decisions about where they want to locate based on where their employees will be the happiest.
Arkansas is one of 37 states that bans gay marriage.
Hewlett-Packard is laying off about 500 workers in Conway as the company streamlines its operations. The $28 million customer support facility only opened 3 years ago and was heralded as a game changer for the state's economic reputation. Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas says HP will remain a major employer in the community.
HP will not confirm how many employees it actually has at its Conway facility. There's some debate that it's somewhere between 1,000 and maybe 1,400 workers. Still, 500 job cuts is significant to any community in Arkansas, and Conway will definitely feel the effects of this in terms of its immediacy. The good news is that a lot of these workers are highly trained, highly educated. They will have other opportunities either within the company or at other companies, particularly tech firms that might be here in Central Arkansas might look to hire some of these HP workers.
The company told employees it will provide severance packages and offer assistance to help those who were laid off find work.
An argument over semantics seems to be settled as it pertains to a new state law that some believed allowed open carry of firearms in the state. Yesterday, Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel issued an opinion regarding Act 746 passed by the Arkansas General Assembly earlier this year. The law, which was intended to make technical corrections to state regulations pertaining to possession of handguns in public places, also included language that permitted Arkansans to legally possess a handgun if on a journey. According to the law, a journey is defined as when someone travels beyond the county in which the person lives. But according to the Attorney General's opinion, the concept of the journey is narrowly tailored throughout legislative history to, quote, permit the carrying of weapons when necessary to defend against perils on the highway, end quote. The Attorney General stated that the journey exception has been a part of Arkansas statutory law since the mid-1800s and that the General Assembly of 2013 is presumed to have enacted Act 746 with this historical connotation in mind.
Beginning this evening, construction of the 71B flyover in Fayetteville will close one westbound lane of the Fulbright Expressway. Vehicles turning onto the Fulbright Expressway and heading west will be required to merge into the left lane, as the right lane will be closed to allow crews to begin preparations for the next phase of construction. The lane shift will extend for about 2,000 feet and will only be in effect between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. through Thursday morning. Both lanes of traffic will remain open during daytime hours.
Dates for Arkansas's annual sales tax holiday have been announced. From just after midnight on August 3rd until just before midnight on August 4th, shoppers in the state will be able to purchase certain school supplies, school art supplies, instructional materials, and clothing without having to pay state and local sales or use tax. The savings could be substantial, as the state's sales and use tax increased by 0.5% at the beginning of this month. That 0.5% increase was the highway tax approved by Arkansas voters last fall.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals last night put another check in the win column when the team defeated the Frisco Rough Riders 7-3. The Naturals won 2 of 3 in the series in Frisco, Texas. The Nats returned to Arvis Ballpark in Springdale for a 4-game series against the Springfield Cardinals beginning tomorrow.
Yesterday, Johnson and Polk counties were among the first Arkansas counties to declare burn bans this summer. The National Weather Service has issued hazardous weather outlooks for much of the listening area, stating there is potential for hazardous heat and humid conditions to intensify during the first half of the week, heat index values topping out at over 100 degrees in many areas. In addition to the hazardous weather outlook, the National Weather Service has issued an excessive heat advisory for the Arkansas River Valley and eastern Oklahoma until 8 p.m. Wednesday. According to the advisory, the heat index will rise to as much as 110 degrees Wednesday afternoon until a weak cold front moves into the area late Wednesday, but hot and humid conditions could persist in southeast Oklahoma through Thursday.
Mostly clear tonight with lows from 71 in northwest Arkansas to 76 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a slight chance of rain with highs from 96 to around 100 degrees. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a slight chance of rain before 1 a.m. Expect lows from 70 in northwest Arkansas to 76 in the Arkansas River Valley. Ozarks at Large. French Hill, CEO of Delta Trust and Bank, contends that federal regulations from the Dodd-Frank financial overhaul are about to overtake small community banks across Arkansas and the nation. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas sat down with French Hill last week to discuss this and other banking matters.
So let's talk about what you're seeing in the market out there right now before we get to some aspects of some other things that I want to visit with you about. But last week I sat down with John Allison, obviously a big deal with his Liberty Bank acquisition. He mentioned that loan demand's still soft. I see that in a lot of, you know, banking reports that come out. Right. Well, what's your sense of where things are economically in terms of what you're seeing in the bank's business?
Well, on the demand side, I do think in the 1-4 family and the residential construction business, I think we've seen new life there, both in Northwest Arkansas and in Central Arkansas, both in multifamily apartments as well as in individual single-family homes. You see that in the national statistics. Really one of the bright spots in the second quarter of the national economy has been housing, and that's the same here in Central Arkansas.
Yeah, some of that information came out in the Burgundy book recently. I've got a couple of stats on that too. You mentioned the that multifamily and the residential uptick. Commercial rates too, vacancy rates seem to be moving down. That's not a bad sign.
No, it's a good sign, particularly in office. I think retail, in my judgment, still soft. I think there was a lot of retail space built in the mid-2000s. And with the advent of internet sales, I do think, retail space, we see softness, maybe not in occupancy, but in pricing. Mm-hmm. I don't see a lot of retail strength in pricing.
Dodd-Frank, obviously something that I can't have a banker on the show not talk about Dodd-Frank. Mm-hmm. Still not fully implemented yet, but
Dodd-Frankenstein, I think.
Is that what that's the nickname there? Yeah, yes, yeah. You're right. Tell me how it's hurting your bank specifically. I hear a lot of anecdotal stories, but I'm right. Interested in yours.
Right, sure. Well, number one is increased compliance costs. Banking is a fixed cost business. you keep heaping regulatory mandates on banks, you raise those costs. It's the larger you are, the larger base you have to spread those regulatory costs across. Specifically, though, in the mortgage arena, the non-secondary mortgage market arena, where a bank makes someone a home loan that they're going to keep on their bank's books, that cost is being driven up dramatically. Every commercial loan officer, even if they don't really do single-family home lending, has to be licensed, fingerprinted, gone through a regulatory review process. The appraisal process has been increased, where rural borrowers are really put at a disadvantage, because the standards don't have enough comps for a borrower in suburban Batesville or suburban Hamburg to build a new house and get it financed and comply with all the new rules in mortgage. So mortgage is a key area. And then one of the great fallacies of Dodd-Frank is this $10 billion number. The Consumer Finance Bureau that was created, which is utterly unnecessary, it's duplicative of the existing federal bank agencies, the state's attorney general, the Consumer Bureau in Washington, and the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. All their mandates will be pushed down to the small banks and be carried out by the existing bank regulators. The deal in Washington was that if you were a bank over $10 billion, you wouldn't have a separate examination by the Consumer Finance Bureau. But they never said you were exempt from the rules of the Consumer mm-hmm. Finance Bureau. So to me, it was an absolute disaster.
That could be corrected. I mean, if there's
could
enough,
be.
If I mean, when you start seeing small yeah. community banks, small town community banks having problems, having more problems, ultimately closing and leaving no options in those communities, yeah. does that not?
Well, but we're talking about years away, and the institutional imperative in Washington is to shove more paper out. The American Bankers Association suggests that 1,000 banks will close due to Dodd-Frank, primarily in small towns where they're the dominant economic player, and some 2.9 million people be put out of work because of the act. You create a separate bureau, independent bureau in Washington. You have a head of it and 1,200 employees spending $2 billion a year. It's hard to get rid of a monster like that.
Last question for you. I brought up some FDIC statistics that showed basically bank income's doing better in Arkansas.
Yeah.
So if banks are doing better over the last couple of years, despite all this regulatory burden, what would happen if that regulatory burden wasn't there? Do you think that we would see even more exponential growth, or do you think it would be along the pace of what we're seeing?
No, you'd see accelerated income growth. Don't forget, some of the improvement in bank earnings, dramatic improvement in bank earnings, is a release of loan loss reserves in the big publicly traded banks because their asset quality ratios have improved. So they're setting aside less reserves for bad loans. That's boosted earnings. Secondly, they've been able to cut deposit rates and keep pace with their refinance on the asset side, where people want lower loan rates. That train is coming to the station, and everyone's going to get off of it on both points. And so I think net earnings growth in the years ahead for someone with not in a growing market is going to be challenging, very challenging.
Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked to French Hill, CEO of Delta Trust and Bank, last week. Support for Talk Business Arkansas and Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
I'm Robin Young. Coming up here and now, musician Peter Gabriel wants to create an interspecies internet, something new and primal, as he found when he played a computer keyboard with a chimp.
It really felt like I had resurrected my ancestors and was playing music with them.
next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now this afternoon from 1 until 3 on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. Steve Yates does not write about the same thing often, if ever. Steve, a fiction writer with an MFA from the University of Arkansas, is the author of the novel Morkin's Quarry, a Civil War-era novel set in southwest Missouri. For his latest book, a collection of short stories called Some Kinds of Love, he goes back to the Missouri Ozarks, but to other places as well, and to different worlds, really, including a slow-pitch softball player who may or may not see the end of the world coming, but also a story about a father trying to figure out his son's possible future left in the hands of his ex-wife. Steve Yates now lives in Mississippi, where he is assistant director and marketing director at the University Press of Mississippi, and he's with me on the phone now. Steve Yates, welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Hey, it's great to be back, Kyle.
Let me go to my first concept that you don't write about the same thing. That's not quite true, because all of these stories do deal with human relationships, but the dozen stories vary wildly in tone and sort of approach. I would think that for you, a writer, that would be great fun.
I think it is, but I think it's also a necessity of who I am and what I do every day. I've got this 50-hour-a-week day job at a university press that's really rewarding and fulfilling, but it consumes a great deal of thought and energy. And so when I write anything that I can think through beginning, middle, and end, I tend to get very obsessed for a very short period of time. And then when I'm finished with it, the next thing that would obsess me that intensely, why, who knows what it'll be? It could be, you know, grasshoppers in Idaho. I don't know. And so that causes me to write things that don't seem like each other.
Well, when do these ideas come up? For instance, the final story in the book, which is about the softball player I mentioned in the introduction, and it's Myla, is that how you would pronounce
mm-hmm.
it?
Yeah.
Myla joins the game, and it's about this character who works as a furniture restorer who can also kind of see into the future. Where does the germination for a story like that come from?
Well, let's not tell anybody who has employed me or currently does, but sometimes these ideas come up at work, and it's not a productive situation. In that that idea came at the News Leader in Springfield, Missouri. So it's a very, very old story in its genesis. In that I was working with this wonderful guy named Larry S. Hazelrigg, and he was a sports writer, but he was kind of one of the last really great journalists, one of those people whose passion was getting it right, even though what you were writing about was people playing slow-pitch softball. And he had told me this story about a pal. He was from Kansas and went to a lot more rodeos than we do in the Ozarks. And he had a pal who could sit there and see a bull rider mount up, and he would then say 10.45 seconds, and the bull rider would go out, and sure enough, 10.45 seconds, he was off the bull. Without fail, he would do this. And I thought, well, you know, there's a very useless skill for the most part. And I wonder what it's like if someone really can see into the future, but only barely into the future, give them maybe 60 minutes. And I kept thinking about this and thinking about this. And once you get a kernel like that going, it just accretes like a crystal in a cave. And it's just there and there and there. And until you get that crystal out, it's almost hard to concentrate on the things you're supposed to be concentrating on in your job.
When did you, along this process for this story, get the idea that what might be seen might be Armageddon?
Oh, in the Ozarks, I would think that's ingrained in any kid who ever had to watch early morning TV. I was never a late sleeper, and I would wake up and turn on the television waiting for Bugs Bunny to come on. And what was on instead of Bugs Bunny were evangelical preachers from places like Koshkonong, Missouri. which, I mean, if that's not exotic enough, I don't know what more you need. But they, the, to a person, these early morning preachers were really concerned with the last chapter of the Bible and not many of the other Gospels at all. You would hardly ever hear them go to Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. It was almost always Revelations and just really enthralling stuff about dragons and people getting eaten up by plagues and locusts. And I may have just equated it with cartoons, but it became ingrained in me so much that it's a kind of apocalyptic thinking that I was exposed to as a little kid watching TV. And why not? Why wouldn't the softball game also be included in the apocalypse?
You just mentioned getting up to watch Bugs Bunny. It's funny because you write just briefly about a child watching a Bugs Bunny cartoon in, I think it's the story New Father.
Yeah, he's watching those pounding machines. Bugs Bunny had, there was such an interesting way in which, I guess, jazz music and classical music that was used in the background of those cartoons was so wonderfully met with new modern terrors. As you look back on those cartoons, there are very funny things happening, but there are also these kind of terrifying compressions of modern life. And there's one where I don't remember what else is going on in the cartoon, but there's a pile driver, and I think either Bugs Bunny or Yosemite Sam is chasing him through this pile driver back and forth. And of course, we all know what's going to happen. Yosemite Sam is going to get smashed, and he's going to come out looking like a coin. But I've just never forgotten that one Bugs Bunny episode. That's just a great scene with the music behind it and the pounding and the pounding and the pounding. And I thought, you know, that would resonate with a father who's exhausted and he's divorced and he's trying to figure out, you know, what am I going to be? How am I going to love this kiddo when all I get is two weekends every month? And that just seemed like the appropriate scene for them both to be watching.
It's funny because in the two stories we've talked about so far, Myla Joins the Game and New Father. In Myla Joins the Game, there's sort of a Donald Harrington-esque feel. Mm. It's sort of this otherworldly. Myla can see the future, and he might be seeing something, and he, you know, so there's this sort of otherworldly feel. Not so in New Father, which is heartbreakingly contemporary and very much about this weekend that a father and a young boy spend together. They're completely different.
Yeah, and you know, I had trouble publishing the book because many people would comment on that, and I always wondered, well, you know, what in the world do you want in a collection of short stories? I would get a note back, which, you know, thank goodness I was getting notes back rather than just total cold-faced rejection. But they would say, there's just so much variety in these. They're so very different. They're so, each one is almost a variant, or it's just not. And I thought, well, did you want them all to be the same? and I was glad that, I was glad that that as a contest book, I mean, most first-time writers, or when they come to publish that collection of short stories, unless they've tagged it to a novel and their agent has sold it that way, they're usually sending it to these contests. And it was a finalist at the Iowa Prize. It was a finalist at the Flannery O'Connor Prize and a finalist at Black Lawrence. So I knew I had the right stories in there. I just had to find someone who wasn't going to make it a place horse, was going to say, okay, well, this one's really the winner.
Your characters have wonderful names, especially when you're writing in the past. They did in Morcan's Quarry, your novel, and in the story Starfall, which opens the collection Some Kinds of Love.
Mm.
There are people named Boom and Nimrod and, who's the male carrier? Nahum?
Oh, Nahum.
Nahum.
Well, of course, some of those come just from the Bible. And,
right.
And very often, you know, growing up in the Ozarks, you'd meet people named Micah, and you'd meet Nahum, you'd meet, you know, some of the minor prophets. And it's always fun to put a spin on that, too, and think, okay, well, sometimes parents will give names to their children and then not really think about it. I mean, naming a child Holofernes or something like that. Oops. But Pilot is one. I thought, well, you know, Pilot's a really beautiful name, and maybe someone who was churchy but somewhat thoughtless would say, you know, I'm going to name my boy Pilot. He's in the Bible. And so Pilot gets his name. That was the story. Starfall is the story that always seemed, I just couldn't stop thinking about Donald Harrington while I was writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the story that I did send to him when it was published, to say, Don, I just couldn't stop thinking of you. I wrote it, and I'm so glad I did, because, you know, he gave me some real positive and wonderful advice about it, and he loved it.
Boy, it does, you don't get a better compliment than that as a writer.
I know, especially as a writer in the Ozarks. I mean, he's more than a touchstone. I mean, he's like, you know, he's Mount Magazine, you know.
Is writing a 19th century story any different for you than writing a contemporary set story?
Not really.
Okay.
No. I think the one thing that people make really big mistakes about, or that at least turns me off when I'm reading historical fiction, or just fiction about rural people, is that people way back in the past had incredible brain capacity. You know, if you were to talk to a mechanic in a steam shop somewhere, they would have all kinds of stuff in their brain to think about, beautiful stuff, lyrical stuff, crazy stuff, complicated stuff. But people will write about people in the past, laborers in the past, or just workers and lovers or whatever, and they tend to try to make them simpletons, rubes, kind of like Thomas Hardy's rustics in Far From the Madding Crowd. Well, Hardy could write about those people because they were relatively contemporary to him. That's fine if he saw that people who were sheep herders were not very bright. But my take on the world is that most people I meet are a lot smarter than I am, and they've got a lot of really cool stuff rattling around in their head, and that's what I want to get at.
The title of the book, Some Kinds of Love. It's a collection of short stories published by the University of Massachusetts Press. I know there are copies at Nightbird Books, but you can also find copies elsewhere, depending where you are on the web as well. Thank you, Steve.
All right. Thank you, Kyle.
Steve Yates' collection, Some Kinds of Love, won the 2012 Juniper Prize for Fiction from the University of Massachusetts. Steve earned his MFA at the University of Arkansas, now lives in Mississippi, where he is assistant director and marketing director at the University Press of Mississippi.
And a great place to find some literature is at a library.
Perhaps the best place.
Perhaps the best place, because it's free.
That's right.
Xenio for Libraries, which was awarded Best New Database of 2012 by Library Journal. It's now available at the Washington County and Springdale Libraries.
This is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Patrons will have unlimited access to complete digital magazines, which can easily be viewed on any internet-enabled device inside or outside of the library. I hope I'm saying this right. Xenio's not right.
I have a reader's vocabulary.
Exactly, me too. It's unique technology. Digitally recreates a magazine page for page, including full color pictures. There's intuitive navigation, keyword article search, and interactive elements such as audio and video. Patrons can choose from more than 70 magazines, including Newsweek, Elle, ESPN the Magazine, and House Beautiful. Magazine issues are not checked out, so they're always available at any time. So that's nice.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. You can read them online or download the issues to your computer or mobile device to read it offline. You will need a computer or mobile device with the Xenio app installed, a current WCLS library card, and an email address. For more information, you can call 479-750-8180 or visit springdalelibrary.org.
Which means, you don't have to be at the library to read this magazine.
Absolutely.
You could be in O'Hare Airport.
Sure.
If you have the library card from the Washington County Library.
And the app.
That's really amazing.
It's very exciting.
Now, Fayetteville Public Library is hosting a series of emerging talent open mic events. This is for children people, 5 to 19. They can participate. The first one is...
Well, they've been doing them. So
they have.
Yes. I think they've had two so far. And the next one, I believe, is this evening.
This evening.
And then there's another one on July 23rd.
Yeah. They begin at 5:30. They last till 7. Jules Taylor, mm-hmm. our friend who never sleeps, is the host. They're musicians, singers, actors, comedians, poets, all welcome. If you want to know more about this, faylib.org, F-A-Y-L-I-B.org.
And Fayetteville is also going to host the 4th annual WordCamp for bloggers and web designers. And this is for all skill levels, and it'll be July 26th through the 28th. Novices are welcome. The workshop itself is from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on July 27th at the Donald W. Reynolds Center for Enterprise Development at the Sam M. Walton College of Business on the University of Arkansas campus here in Fayetteville. Registration is $30, and tickets and more information are available at WCFAY.com.
Just think WordCamp Fayetteville, WCFAY.com. And we did a story, I think, the first WordCamp
probably
was in
the first year, yes.
And the idea here is you'll have people who really know stuff and want to take it to another level,
right?
But you have people
who are novices,
right?
Who aren't
just want to start the blog or the website,
start learning, yeah, absolutely.
You don't have to learn HTML anymore,
no,
which is great,
yeah. In a few minutes, the works of Arkansas-born artist Elise Taylor at a local library. But first, a look ahead at visual art that can be viewed in July around the region.
Two exhibits are up at the Art Center of the Ozarks through the month. Terry Duchesne's photography exhibit shows the three dimensions of her work in a show titled Liquid Abstracts, Koi, and Masks. Featured is a series of Italian masks captured by her as she and her husband walk the streets of Venice. The second exhibit at ACO is Jonathan Harris's South by Southwest, a collection of acrylic paintings that pay homage to his time in the Santa Fe area.
Among the featured artists at the Fayetteville Underground this month is visiting artist Matt Avery, a collage artist from Chicago. For his photographics series, Avery has taken commercial photography from magazines and transformed them to fully manifest the latent aspirations of the imagery. Also featured is Fayetteville's Gregory Moore, who will show 30 new paintings in a series called Lost Cat. The installation tells the story of a once domesticated feline in exile. Moore combines abstracted renderings of animal and plant life, discarded objects, and depictions of suburban nostalgia to explore themes of dislocation, spiritual growth, memory, personal change, and myths of family.
Two exhibits recently opened at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. The first takes a focus on George Washington. It features an assortment of documents written by Washington himself or by contemporaries who knew him. It's on loan from the Harlan Crow Library in Dallas. This exhibit furthers the museum's mission to America and American art. Also included is a first edition of George Washington's Last Will and Testament, printed from the record of the County Court of Fairfax, 1800. The exhibit, free, does not require special tickets.
Another exhibit that recently opened at Crystal Bridges is Angels and Tomboys, Girlhood in 19th Century American Art. It explores the portrayal of young girls in art from the sentimental, innocent stereotype to the free-spirited individual. The exhibition includes approximately 72 masterworks, including paintings, sculpture, prints, and photographs. Works by John Singer Sargent, Winslow Homer, and Thomas Eakins, together with those by leading women artists such as Cecilia Beaux and Mary Cassatt, reveal a new provocative psychological element not found in early Victorian portraiture.
And the juried art exhibit, Naturally Diverse Arkansas, is at the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum. Its focus is the natural beauty of Arkansas shown in a variety of media.
As you walk into the Springdale Public Library, you see what one expects to see: shelves and shelves of books. Some of those books are surely on the topic of art. But if you turn to the left, you can see actual art. On two 16 feet long and 7 feet tall panels hang the works of Elise Taylor, an Arkansas-born self-trained artist. In the past, her works have graced the walls of coffee shops and art galleries. This location of a library was a bit of a challenge, but one she was willing to take.
Every day we're learning, and I would like to expand in any way and have different life experiences. If I limit myself to only galleries with trying to make money, that's not really what I'm trying to do or achieve. It's more, for me, it's to get my name out there. If I make money, that's amazing. I just want to branch out in any way I can.
Fitting that we have just passed the 4th of July weekend, Taylor's theme for her July show is Freedom from Within. The paintings on one panel are all red, white, and blue, containing the stars and stripes that represent America's independence.
So I enjoyed it, and then I also found sayings or quotes for patriotism, and which works out great because there are a lot of children who come up and read the little sayings a lot whenever they have things. So it's interactive in many ways.
Sayings such as, "From every mountain, let freedom ring," and "The American flag is the symbol of freedom, national pride, and history." One of those paintings is of a flag, and one that she is incredibly proud of, a two-panel work that features the waves of a flag blowing in the wind. The opposite wall panel contains paintings that represent that very freedom from within. These works contain the bright acrylics that Taylor is accustomed to painting with. She says she likes double meanings, complex answers to things that make people think a little bit more. She points out one piece in particular.
I have one small piece. It's called That New Tree Scent, and it's a 6x9 inch, and it is a car freshener, but it's a Christmas tree, and it's July, so it's sort of like Christmas in July. So I like little stories behind things.
Having grown up in the Ozarks, she enjoys working with nature, and many of her works contain that theme, from the tree to a moon to a sunrise.
The tequila sunrise is one of my pieces. I love the combination of red and yellow, and then I always like to add a little bit of gold. And so I was trying with my palette knife to see if I could achieve texture and the sun look and the sunset.
If you caught the name of that work, Tequila Sunrise, you can tell that Taylor has fun when choosing a title for each piece, and each piece does have a title.
I believe the name is also what makes the piece, and I have a sun piece, a black hole sun. I am a child of the 90s, so yes. And I have the moon, which is moonshine, and then Crash, Dave Matthews. Last Few, that is the same lyrics in the song. I just try to slip in little things to see if people catch it or if they have the same thoughts or feelings as I do in the pieces.
Those names are reflective of her style, a style which can't really be given a name itself. Taylor says it is more like a thought process.
All of my pieces, I believe, are thoughts that you think through, or a dream state, sort of as you remember the main points and then jot them down with paper or just painting. And with memories, you don't really remember the background, you remember the actual point.
For her, painting is her zen, something that she does at home first thing in the morning or to relax in the evening, often accompanied by her young son. Her day job is as a graphic designer for the family business she runs in Fayetteville, making signs, banners, and logos. And one of those you may recognize from Waffle House.
The Hog and Waffle, the little guy that's running around chasing the hog that's chasing the waffle, and pretty excited about having one of my designs in there. And a couple years ago, when they first started having the design out, they had it on the Waffle House on 6th Street, and they had and they still do have panels that are 2 foot by 4 foot on the outside. And whenever actually Snoop Dogg came into town, his favorite place is the Waffle House to eat. He went before and after the show and liked my panel so much that he actually ripped it off the wall. So that's pretty exciting.
You too could have one of Taylor's pieces on your wall. She often donates works to charities like Equestrian Bridges and the Jasper Christian Food Room, tailoring the pieces to that organization. like for an upcoming event for the Girl Scouts.
I'm going to make patches, and I think that would be really cute and personalized. I was a Girl Scout when I was a kid, and there are a lot out there, so they would be able to walk down memory lane.
Her works from Freedom From Within may very well be donated when they come off the walls of the Springdale Public Library. A reception for the exhibit will be held this Thursday evening from 6 to 7. For more information on artist Elise Taylor, visit her website, elisetheartist.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
When Jimmy Wales started Wikipedia, it was manageable.
In the early days, I used to read every single edit as they came in. I would click and see what someone had done.
Someone in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Edited. Spanish language. Someone in the United Kingdom. Edited. Of Monsters and Men.
That only lasted for a very short period of time. It got very fast. It was impossible to keep up with everything.
Channeling chaos into collaboration. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM.
From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
So, busy month ahead.
Yes, August used to be downtime.
When?
Way back when. Way back when. I'm telling you, years ago.
Years ago.
But August is not as busy.
You know, but it's very busy.
Yes.
People getting ready to go back to school, and they've got the tax-free weekend, that first weekend in August now, and people getting back from vacations.
That's right. Not to mention all the third Fridays in Rogers and first Fridays in Bentonville and first Thursdays in Fayetteville, second Saturday in Siloam. Also, of course, in August, this will be the fourth year for the Fayetteville Roots Festival.
Yes, fourth year. Can't believe that.
So, because the organizers do not rest on their laurels.
They don't.
They won't rest on anything.
No.
More stages this year, more venues, more free music as part of the festival. Yes.
I feel like every year I talk to them, it's like, we're going to, but wait, there's more.
Yes, they are an infomercial. Yes. But wait, there is more this year. Today you can begin learning about the full picture because within the last hour, I think, the website has gone live with the full schedule.
Oh,
not
great.
Not just the people. Which
but
we kind of know.
Who's going to be on what schedules?
And when.
See, this might be my favorite day before music festivals is the day that the schedule comes out because then you can sit down and start highlighting who you want to see and when. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Well, then today is one of your favorite days.
Today is one of my favorite days. That's great.
Well, Brian Hembry of Three Penny Acre, of course, he's one of the organizers, as is Jeremy Gothrop from Greenhouse Grill. Mm-hmm. This morning they came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about going live with the schedule.
We'll have the full breakdown hour by hour from Thursday through Sunday published today on the website. And a lot of folks have been clamoring to get that and wanting to kind of know how that's going to break down. And so that will be published as this goes live today.
Now, going all the way back to when the Steel Wheels were here for a show at George's, the two of you announced some of the artists back then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think you mentioned Iris DeMent and some other folks. Yeah. Have you been working since then to fill out the schedule?
Yeah, you know, the artists are out there. We have slowly, starting in April, we really did a full kind of, you know, artist announcement. And we actually did it different this year where we rolled it out on Facebook, an artist or two a day over a span of a month. And it was really fun to do that. We got a lot of traction, a lot of people talking about it, and I think a lot of people anxious about that. So people have known the artists and known, hey, if I'm coming for all 4 days, I'm going to get to see all these artists. But now this is going to break it down to see exactly who's going where and where, you know, all the artists are going to be placed in the four-day sequence. I guess we could talk about that now. You know, talk about the lineup, eight artists over the 2 days of the main stage at the Walton Arts Center. It'll kick off on Friday night at 6 p.m. On the main stage, Three Penny Acre.
We've heard of them.
I've heard of those guys. After that, Joe Pug and his band will be with us, and we're really excited about Joe Pug. And then Iris DeMent, and then Del McCurry. And so that's, we feel like, a pretty solid lineup on the main stage just for Friday night. And we know a lot of people are going to be interested in Iris coming back to Arkansas. Then on Saturday, the main stage kicks off, same time frame, 6 to 10:30. The 6 o'clock slot is Mary Gaucher and her band, a great songwriter, originally from New Orleans. Just fabulous songwriter, kind of in the John Prine tradition. And then into Elephant Revival, which is a Colorado band with kind of local ties and really, you know, built a strong following here in Fayetteville. And then John Fulbright's coming back with his full band.
Now, he wowed people last year in Star Theater.
It was pretty incredible. Star Theater was packed to the hilt. I drug you in through the back door.
Yes.
I was like, you got to see this guy. And I think he left people wanting more. So we're really pumped to bring him back on the main stage and give him more access and have more people be able to see his show.
And that's Saturday.
Saturday. And then the finale on Saturday night after John Fulbright is Jerry Douglas with his band. And so each night we feel is really balanced and offers kind of a really diverse mix of music. And you know, we feel like, you know, it's pretty compelling across the board.
Jeremy, what do you have to do now between now and 42 plus days?
Right. I have a clipboard that's just stacked with spreadsheets and to-do lists and ever going list. I think right now it's push things. It's push that concept, sell tickets, get people excited, finalize all the food elements, finalize. So it's just giant checklist of getting things ready. And again, every year it's talk with the farmers and see which food's going to be available, where we're going to be sitting August 22nd and what we can provide, and we bring the three chefs together to create this food throughout the weekend, what is available and what farmers can participate.
As we sit here right now, we had a cooler than normal late June. I understand that takes its toll on the ripening of some things.
Right.
We're dry again. We're not in the drought we were last year, but we haven't had rain for a while. So can farmers reasonably estimate what they'll have then?
I think they know their land and they know their crops, and they're very conservative because they don't want to say they've got things they don't and come through. But luckily, we have such a diverse climate here and diverse range of farmers that we end up getting a plethora of different foods, which is great, and everybody specializes in different things. So ultimately, we'll have a bounty, even though it's going to be hot in August and dry, likely. But yeah, all the same.
Yeah, I was impressed last year. I mean, it had been a two-year drought, essentially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Jeremy and the other chefs were really creative, and the farmers were creative to kind of bring together, you know, this basket of food that really made for I don't know that anyone looked at it and said, oh, my gosh, this is slim pickings. I think it still felt like this really compelling, you know, festival, local food festival fare. But you know, I'm excited to see what Jeremy and crew comes up with.
And by basket, you know, it was probably close to a ton.
Yeah,
of food.
That's a big basket.
Very big baskets. So we had lots of participation, and yeah, it was amazing. And that's kind of part of the challenge.
You mentioned those spreadsheets and those clipboards. This is year four, and last year, you know, you'd expanded. So you've got experience under your belt. Is it easier or more manageable than it has been in the past?
I keep saying easier when the wife says, how's it going? Oh, this is easier. But then I feel the foot in the mouth.
Well, I don't want you to jinx anything.
Right, yeah. But yes, easier in the fact that we do have some systems in place, but then we continually try and tweak and add things. So this year we're at 10 stages, mm-hmm. More venues this year, more activities, new things in the gallery, new experiences here, and then just want the experience overall to be heightened and more enjoyable. So easier, no.
Quickly, you mentioned 10 stages. The venues include Walton Arts Center. Because you've got Star and Baum Walker.
Star and Baum Walker at the Walton Arts Center. We're utilizing the inside and outside stage at George's, both during the day on Saturday and then late night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We have stages at the library. We'll do the Live Ozarks at Large broadcast again on Friday at noon of the festival. We've got the stage at the Garner's Farm that opens up everything on Thursday night. We'll have, you know, community stages, free stages again also at the Farmer's Market. We're actually going to do Maybell Music is going to host a street square dance on Saturday night. Let's see what else. We have Kingfish as a stage. I'm leaving something out. Oh, we added Greenhouse. Oh, we didn't add Greenhouse Grill. We've always had Greenhouse Grill. We've got Greenhouse Grill. But we added our Sega's at the Depot on Saturday. There'll be some music happening there. And we also added some late night music at Maxine's.
And does the website also show the free stages, the community stages?
With the schedule that goes live today, it's going to list everything. So it's going to be broken down when you look at the schedule. It'll say community stages. Those are free stages that are accessible by everyone. There'll be the main stages. Those are the ticketed main stages that either happen at George's during the day or at the Walton Arts Center. And then there's a late night stages. So they're kind of grouped into three categories.
Brian, Jeremy, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Brian Hembry and Jeremy Gothrop are co-organizers of the Fayetteville Roots Festival. The festival will open Thursday, August 22nd. More information available at FayettevilleRoots.com.
And just ahead, we'll be giving away two what we like to call family packs, four Naturals vouchers and four tickets to any Malco movie theater in the area. We'll ask a question, or actually a couple of questions, in a moment.
After a holiday weekend last weekend of fireworks, this weekend offers a wide variety of activities, including, but not limited to...
The third annual Fleur Delicious Weekend is in Eureka Springs. There are cooking demonstrations, wine tastings, special menus, and an eco-delicious arts and furniture exhibition and sale at the studio of Robert R. Norman. Plus cooking classes and more. You can see the entire lineup of events at FleurDeliciousWeekend.com. Well, perfect. I'm going to be there for something else, so now I can go to this.
There you go.
Awesome.
Now, something that actually will be happening this weekend, but also happens tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... tomorrow morning and Sunday morning, you can spend a cool morning with your own kayak while guided by a park interpreter at Hobbs State Park Conservation Area Visitor Center. That's on Highway 12 East, Highway 12 just east of the War Eagle Road Highway 12 intersection. Easy to find once you're there.
Mm-hmm.
All participants will learn the basics of paddling as the flotilla explores a calm arm of Beaver Lake. Recreational kayaks, paddles, and life jackets will be provided. You bring the bottle of water, the sunscreen, and the proper dress for summer. Space is limited. Both tomorrow's session and the Sunday session last from 9:30 a.m. until 11:30 a.m.
I've never kayaked.
I haven't either. I don't know how to swim.
Oh, well, there's that.
Yes.
The Firefly Festival is Saturday at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks. It begins at 6 p.m. and lasts until 10. On center stage, guests may enjoy the child-pleasing act of shaky bugs at 6:30. That's also with Jules Taylor, who we mentioned earlier.
Does not sleep.
Followed by a special Firefly concert by Still on the Hill at 8. After dark performances include Merrily Spins Hula Hoops. I've seen her. She's very good.
Mm-hmm.
The flaming hula hoop.
Oh, that sounds so dangerous.
It's
okay,
fine,
all right.
I promise.
Okay.
Kaleidoscope Dance Academy, Night Blossom Fire Spinners, and the Grand Finale Lantern Launch. Admission is $8 an individual, $7 each for a family of four or five, and $6 each for groups of six or more.
And Firefly is the inspiration for a question that can lead to other entertainment, because the family pack we're going to give away, again, we're giving away tickets to the Naturals and Malco Movie. Four tickets to the Naturals are vouchers. You exchange them at will call for tickets for the
day. For whatever game you go to.
Right.
Right. As long as it's not sold out.
Right. And then Malco Movie Theater pass as well. Four of each.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We're going to give left brain and right brain folks a chance to win.
Of course.
I mentioned I was influenced by fireflies today.
Okay.
The left brain question. There are more than 2,000 species of fireflies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The most commonly known ones are nocturnal.
Sure.
But some species are diurnal.
So I can find them in the daytime.
Yes, they sleep at night. They fly around during the day.
Hmm.
I want to know what's the most notable difference between the nocturnal and most diurnal species of firefly.
Okay, so that's for left brain people. What about right brain people?
Right brain, also inspired by fireflies. There is apparently, I checked this early this morning, no official collective name for a group of fireflies. You know, like a pack of wolves. Or pride of lions.
Oh, those are my favorite words.
I know. Collective nouns. All right. Apparently, there is no specific one for fireflies.
Okay.
So, we're looking for your suggestion. What's the best collective noun that should be applied to fireflies?
Oh, I like it.
So, what we'll do is send in either your answer to the question about nocturnal versus diurnal,
mm-hmm.
or your creative response to collective nouns. Send either or both to OzarksAtLarge@gmail.com. And we will, all the correct scientific questions will be put in the ceramic cow, one winner pulled out. We will have someone else, without your name attached, so they won't be playing favorites, blindly pick their favorite of the creative answers.
I love it.
We'll have a winner for each.
I'm looking forward to the creative ones.
Again, I am too.
Email your answers to OzarksAtLarge@gmail.com. And you have until tomorrow when we, at the noon show, we will draw winners.
Tell us what town you live in. And if you have a name that's been mispronounced by others before, chances are I'll do it again. So tell me how to pronounce your name. If it's
okay.
Such as that. The 63rd Annual Opera in the Ozarks runs through July 19th at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs. This festival of fully produced operas is an educational program for singers pursuing a career in the world of opera. 2013 productions include Elixir of Love, Madama Butterfly, and Pirates of Penzance. Tickets and more information, opera.org. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Beech Grove.
Beech Grove? Where is Beech Grove?
It is in Franklin County.
Well, that's a perfect one for a summer day.
Right?
All right. Is there a beach there? Does it look like?
It does not look like there's a beach there. It's in the middle of the Ozark St. Francis National Forest.
Probably not a beach.
Not a beach.
All right. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We'll be back together tomorrow for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large.
Have a happy Tuesday.